It's an important day when we record this because there is a lot of clutter in my mind, as I bet is in the minds of many of you, because Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman has just finished her five-part, like I said, like a five-day test match, five-part presentation on Modi government's stimulus plan for the economy. At the same time, today is the last of lockdown 3, which means from tomorrow, another stage will begin. Now, we know that there will be a lockdown 4 because Prime Minister Narendra Modi had said in his speech that lockdown 4 will be there, will be very different from what we've seen so far. And we know that it will be different and it should be different. So, everybody is wondering how exactly will this plan work? Is this plan workable? Also, what exactly will lockdown 4 mean? Underlying all this, if you look at your front pages, if you look at your primetime news, on all the channels which focus on news, in fact, even channels which are more entertaining than regular news channels, boring news channels like, say, The Print, even there, the story that is dominating everything, even the stimulus plan after the first day or two, it's been overtaken by the story of laborers going back. I've also been guilty of using the term migrants about them. They really are not migrants. They are laborers returning to their native homes. They are all citizens of India. Constitution gives us the right to go and work anywhere. So they are not migrants in that sense. It's just that these are people who go somewhere else and work. So our children can also go and work in Bangalore, or children of one of you in Bangalore, or any of you in Bangalore can be working in Delhi. So these are workers in other cities who are going back because they saw their economy, their jobs, their living, everything disrupted. So that story has dominated everything, including the stimulus package, which is quite comprehensive. In fact, you will find that it's not even been discussed threadbare. At The Print, we'll be doing it over the next 3 days. Now, as I look at this situation, I am trying to declutter some governance styles and methods, and also talk some politics with a little bit of my own opinion thrown in, because I don't always do it, so I must make a clear statement. A little bit of my own opinion thrown in, because some of these are issues that I feel strongly about, and also where I have taken positions which, as it happens with a lot of these sharp positions, fail to please either side. So you get hit from the left, you get hit from the right, and you have to take it on the chest in the middle of your own. So what are the two things I talk about? These are two things from very far apart. One is a tweet from Richard Haass. You will see it on the screen. Richard Haass has been the president of the Council on Foreign Relations, a very well-respected think tank, policy debating organization in America, in New York. It also published Foreign Affairs, the magazine that we are very familiar with. It's also a forum where heads of states go and talk, from Narendra Modi to Imran Khan to last time UN General Assembly, Foreign Minister Jay Shankar had gone there. So it's a forum everybody wants to be at. And Richard Haass is a former director of policy planning in the State Department in the Bush Jr. administration, and a former key advisor to Colin Powell when he was Secretary of State. Also, Richard Haass is a wonderful thinker. I've had the pleasure of knowing him reasonably well professionally. He's also featured on Walk the Talk. He's written a bunch of books that you can see, but his latest book is very important. This is The World, A Brief Introduction. And before that, he had a book, again, moving into today's crisis, that was called A World in Disarray, American Foreign Policy and the Crisis of the Old Order. So old order was changing, now Corona has changed it even more. So what does this tweet say? I'm not talking about his books right now or the larger balance of power issues. I'm talking about one tweet. He said, what does Corona teach you? Which system works well? Does democracy work well? Does dictatorship work well? And then he gives you examples. So you have democracies which have handled this crisis very well. That is Germany, Australia, South Korea, Taiwan. All democracies, they've handled it beautifully so far. I'd say so far so good, but globally they are acknowledged as having handled it well. I'm not adding any countries, I'm only listing the ones that he has mentioned. Then he says at the same time, look at US and Brazil. They are both democracies, but they made a complete hash of their coronavirus pandemic handling. Both countries are a mess. So just because you're a democracy doesn't mean you will do well. And just because you're a democracy, it doesn't mean you will do badly. Then what about dictatorships? So you have dictatorships that have done very well. Vietnam has done very well, brilliantly well. And China, although he's a smart thinker, so he's put a question mark with China because none of us quite knows the figures from China and nobody trusts China's figures. But if you trust them, then Vietnam definitely and also China are dictatorships, but they've managed it very well. Do all dictatorships manage it very well? So he again points out to you, think of Iran and Russia, whose handling of the same pandemic has been a disaster. So democracies can do well in a crisis like this and can do badly in a crisis like this. Similarly, dictatorships can do badly in a crisis like this. They can do well in a crisis like this. So what doesn't matter is the system that you have. He says what matters is the quality of leadership you have, which means you can now see if you are looking at democracies that Donald Trump and Bolsonaro, they come up short in this area. And similarly, if you look at dictatorships, very strong dictators, Iran, Khamenei, in fact, Iran, the Maulvis of Qom, Ayatollahs of Qom, and Russia, Mr. Putin himself, in spite of that, they've done wrong. So he says what matters is the quality of leadership. Very interestingly, India is a big democracy. It doesn't feature anywhere here, as some of the other countries don't have. It's not just the limitation of Twitter. It is possibly because nobody is quite sure of where to slot India. If you look at India so far, it would look like India has handled the pandemic quite well. India has been decisive. It's been quick with its action. That's what Tom Friedman said on Off the Cuff last week. He said Narendra Modi actually gets very decent grades because he was quick with his decision making. But when you look at the situation right now, if you leave it there, yes, India has been quick with decision making and India's numbers are nowhere near as high as they were predicted to be. So much so that many of the same people who were predicting India to just roll over and for millions to die by now are now reluctantly saying after for a long time that we can't understand what's going on, there must be something to it. They've now begun to say that maybe so far so good. But India's story is now changing, not on the numbers. The numbers are still not bad. Numbers are going up, numbers will go up unless there's a turnaround. But at least the doubling rate is decreasing. Fatalities are not increasing in terms of percentage. The problem in India is this migrant crisis, because the story that dominates the airwaves, the newspapers, radio stations, social media all over the world about India is now the story of what is called as migrant labor. And as I said, we are wrong to call them migrant labor. I've also been wrong. From now, I'm programming my head to stop saying migrant labor. These laborers in unorganized jobs going back home in desperation. This story is now dominating everything, including domestic politics. So if you saw the last two tranches of Nirmala Sitharaman's presentations, particularly the fifth, it looked like for about first 40-45 minutes in each one, there was explanations about the migrants, explanations about the poor, all that we have done, all that we are going to do. All these are explanations in the dressing room after you drop the ball in a match that maybe cost your team the match, or that might cost your team the match. So how did India get into this situation? Let me now quote the second story. I told you I will use two stories as ploys, or I will use two ploys to set up today's Cut the Clutter. So first was that Richard Haas tweet. And you will know in the course of time why I mentioned that. The second is a story that Narendra Modi used to tell when he was building up his national profile and effectively campaigning for prime ministership beginning 2013 onwards. And then he used to make fun of Sonia Gandhi and NSE's anti-poverty schemes and giveaway schemes. Something that I equally used to be critical of. In fact, all my writings are available on Google. Many of those have been published in the collection of my columns until 2014, that book called Anticipating India, published by HarperCollins. So it's all on the record. I was among the strongest critics of these schemes, which I called as povertarian ideas, and I should not repeat to you what they were. So Narendra Modi made fun of them, and one of the stories that he used with telling effect is something that I can never forget, because it was a very good story, and I always thought that spoke the truth, and that also gave you an idea where he was coming from, that was the way he looked at these things. So the story was about a villager who's going through a jungle and then runs into a tiger, and the tiger is then menacing the villager. So the villager now has nowhere to run, because he knows that if he starts running, tiger will catch him. So dono ki aankhon mein baat hoti hai, they look each other in the eye, and then the villager says, don't try and attack me. So tiger says, why? He says, because Sonia Gandhi has given me the license of a gun. So if you attack me, I'll get the gun and shoot you. So the tiger says, okay, get the gun and shoot me na. Right now you just have the license, you have no gun. So Narendra Modi said, these are all the rights that Sonia Gandhi is giving you. Right to food, right to education, your Manrega, etc., etc., etc. Then he said in parliament, it's a clip that keeps going viral and will keep going viral every time he puts another 20,000 rupees in Manrega. In parliament, he said that you are giving people money for digging pits. Ab gadda khodne ke liye logon ko paisa de rahe hain azadi ke 60 saal ke baad, 60 years after independence. This is an indication of your failure, not success. So today, if Nirmala Sitharaman announces that another 40,000 crores is being put in Manrega, forget rolling it back. Now this is the sixth year of Modi government. Manrega came into being at a time when India had been independent for about 60 years. Today, India has been independent for 73 years. So what Narendra Modi was mocking Sonia Gandhi for having done 60 years after India had become independent, he is now not just continuing with it, but making it much bigger. So one, if it was a bad idea, he's compounding that bad idea. If that was a crime, then he's also becoming complicit in that crime. But if it was a great idea, then he's accepting it as a great idea and putting more money in this. My view, I told you, I'll give you my opinion also. I think this Manrega is a scheme. I'm not grudging poor people getting money. They can get more money. But the fact that 73 years after independence, you still have to use schemes like this to put some money in so many talented people's hand. People of India are very talented, very entrepreneurial, tells you that this is the failure of Indian political system that cuts across party lines. Don't blame the Congress, don't blame the BJP. Unfortunately, whatever our political party's ideology might be on religion, on society, on caste, whatever, when it comes to political economy, it's all about the same. It's all about the same. It is sort of fake, my opinion, fake pink socialist in a self-serving way, which is poverty is my birthright, and I shall make sure I do everything in my power to make sure that you have it. And then I will throw free money at you. So Manrega is one of those. Obviously, this is a crisis time. It's a good thing if more money is being put into Manrega. But for 6 years, if Narendra Modi has not been able to fix this essential systemic issue, then it's a failure. There is no doubt about this. Now, you might still be wondering, why did I mention Richard Haass and that tweet from his strong leaders, weak leaders, good leaders, bad leaders, democracies, dictatorships? So India is a democracy with a very strong leader. In fact, the strongest leader in my book ever, even stronger than Indira Gandhi at her peak, because even at her peak, India had a very strong opposition, so strong that it bothered her so much that she ended up putting them in jail during the emergency. So she had a strong opposition, and a lot more media spoke out in her time. Of course, the media was much smaller. A lot more media spoke out in her time. It was called Jute Press by her, because some of it was owned by jute barons, notably the Indian Express. Ramnath Goenka then owned a big jute business out of West Bengal, which then became Jute Press, as she called it. So she had those troubles. She was never as powerful as Narendra Modi is now. So India has its strongest leader ever, with a majority, with a second majority. India is also a democracy. So where would India feature if you also wanted to add our country, India, in Richard Haass's list? So once again, India has done a lot of things right, particularly an early lockdown, the comprehensiveness of its lockdown, the firmness, excellent, great decision, risk-taking, putting infrastructure in places, buying yourself time, a lot of those things have been done right. But why do I keep saying India is like, Modi government is like a player that dropped the catch? You remember that World Cup semi-final when somebody, and South African, dropped the catch of an Australian, and that lost them the semi-final and maybe their last chance of getting the World Cup for a very long time. So this was a catch like that was dropped. Why did it happen? It happened because everything in this government comes top down. And second, this government, sometimes when something works for you, you fall in love with it. This government has fallen in love with the idea of deciding by shock and awe. That means the Prime Minister comes at 8 o'clock, he makes these announcements. It started with demonetization. He makes these announcements, the whole country has to sit up, and his fans are very impressed, and they think, now this is a decisive leader who takes such a big decision. Great, keep doing that. I'm not grudging. No voter can grudge any leader his or her style, but provided you've done the homework in the back. In this case, no homework was done. If homework was done, or what is called as staff work, our bureaucrats are very smart. If you tell them to go do what they are good at, if they had done the homework, somebody would have anticipated that this will unleash this outstation, I'm again not saying migrant, outstation labor problem. So speak out to them. Either tell them, hang on, it's a question of a few weeks, your jobs will be secure. I will either make sure you keep getting your wages, or I will ensure that you get compensated once the lockdown is lifted, because this is not a life sentence. Lockdown is not going on and on. Or arrangements should have been made to put them in transit and then to transport them, arrange trains, buses at that time when, frankly, there was less chance of them being infected as well. What's happened now is, because that wasn't planned, essentially because we've become imprisoned to the idea of shock and awe, governing by shock and awe, that wasn't done. It has now become a problem which is chronic. So you've come to lockdown 4. Now we will begin to open up the economy. Many of these people's jobs will again become available, and lockdown 4 will also not go on forever. So before your special trains can now take them home, you will then be running Shramik Express trains to bring them back from their homes to their jobs. So once again, why am I saying all this today? I'm saying all this today because this is the last day of lockdown 3 as I record this. Until now, nobody had been told what lockdown 4 will be like. There's no state secret in it. This is not like Pakistanis will find out what you're going to bomb next. Nothing doing. You could have shared this information or your plan with the rest of the country 3 days earlier, 4 days earlier, 5 days earlier, even 48 hours earlier. You could always have changed something if you wanted to do. But if you had done that, broad contours of a new plan, people would have then planned accordingly. even in their minds, not just the governments, but human beings. So if you had said maybe 2 or 3 or 4 days back that you will keep these sectors open, you will open up these sectors or these activities, maybe a lot of the lakhs were still lining up the highways or lining up at railway stations, begging for a transit back home, would have decided, okay, the shop where I work is going to open, the dhaba where I'm working is going to open on Monday or Tuesday, why shouldn't I stay on? So this idea of, it's great to have power, also because it comes from democracy and the vote, it's great to be decisive, but it doesn't always work if you rule by surprise, because there's no percentage in continuing to surprise your own people all the time, because in the process, ultimately, you end up getting yourself caught in surprise. That happened with Modi government's March 24 lockdown. And for some reason, no amends are still being made because the right lesson is not being learned. That's the reason I said this will be a slightly more opinionated cut the clutter than I usually would, because now 12 hours before the next lockdown, the rules or the plans have not been shared with Janta at large. It's the Janta for whom it matters. Why should they discover it suddenly when it pops up on social media or on TV or someplace? Don't surprise your own people. It doesn't always work. It worked to the extent that it worked with demonetization. You had a purpose, you were wrong, the purpose was not served, but keeping that secret was understandable. Keeping secrets about what people might be doing tomorrow, day after, and from then on makes no sense at all, except it might give the system a new power kick, but once again, the joke is on the system. That's why I don't know where would we fit India and Indian democracy and Narendra Modi as a leader in Richard Haase's tweet, and maybe that's the reason India does not feature in that list of countries.